Hey, Linda, I hear you have a stat. It's not really great news, but we have good news that will be attached to it. What is that statistic?
More than 40 million people in the U.S. are considered to be food insecure, which is why composting is such a useful tool, because it closes the food loop and helps communities grow more healthy food.
That's Linda Bilsons, our project manager of Composting for Community at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance here on the Building Local Power podcast one more time. I'm Chris Mitchell. I've been here for most of the episodes, I guess. I work on a lot of our broadband work, but I also really enjoy yelling into a microphone. So I'm back. And Linda's going to introduce our guests, who both come from very interesting locations, two urban areas that are doing really great work with composting. So Linda, why don't you take it away?
Thanks, Chris. It is my great pleasure to introduce our two speakers for today. Sophia Hossein of Real Food Farm in Baltimore in the Clifton Park neighborhood. She'll be talking about the role that her farm plays in addressing food access issues, and the role that composting plays in that. Also joining us is Guy Schaefer, who works as a volunteer for the youth-powered, bike-based composting service BK Rot in the Bushwick neighborhood of Brooklyn. BK Rot, which was started by Sandy Nurse and Renee Pepperone in 2013, brings youth of color into the green economy that's developing around organics recycling in New York City. Guy recently finished a dissertation on compost in New York City, in which he argues for the value of community-based projects for pushing alternative possibilities for the composting in the city.
Welcome to the show, both Sophia and Guy. I was just thinking about this, I was reminded of stories about ILSR's founding, the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, in the mid-70s when our founders got together. They had this idea that one could be self-reliant inside cities, whereas a lot of the thought at the time for people who were thinking about self-reliance and how to be less dependent on big companies or federal government programs, a lot of them thought you had to live in the way out in farm countryside. And so I think it's really great to talk about these programs and get a better sense of how we can be more independent and how our communities can solve their own problems locally. So I'm really excited. I'll probably do more listening than usual, something I should learn in general. So Linda, if you want to start the conversation, I'd really appreciate it.
Sophia and Guy, I was hoping that you could start by setting the scene for our listeners about your communities. Where do you live? Where do each of you live and work? And what are some of the challenges that the members of your community might be facing? What forces are at work? And what opportunities do you see that exist or maybe don't exist in your communities? Sophia, do you want to start?
Sure, yes. Baltimore is a really interesting place in that it has a unique kind of socio-politically unstable environment. The city is home to thousands and thousands of vacant homes, which is really interesting, and also has a lot of food deserts. So some of the challenges that we face look like non-inclusive development, obviously. I mentioned the food deserts, and it's still a very affordable city. We do actually have quite a bit of opportunity to turn a lot of these vacant lots and vacant houses and vacant green spaces into things like community gardens. And I think that that's a really nice place where we can bring the compost and we can close the food circle and put it to use to rehabilitate these spaces to, you know, bring the power back to the community as far as what they'd like to see happen.
Bushwick is a historically Black and brown neighborhood that's been undergoing a lot of really heavy gentrification in the last maybe 10 years or so. And so that's kind of the scene in which BK Rot is operating. We've been kind of watching as the neighborhood is really slipping out of the hands of the people who have lived there. The Black and brown people who have lived in this neighborhood for years are kind of losing ownership of these spaces and also just losing opportunities within what Bushwick is turning into. And so a lot of what we're interested in doing in BK Rot is trying to create a different kind of development in the area that is focused on creating opportunities for the people who have historically lived there, for the Black and brown youth who have been left out of a lot of the development of the neighborhood.
So next, I was hoping that each of you could talk a little bit more about the work that you're doing, the groups that you work with, in terms of building local power, how you might be empowering your communities by bringing people together, sharing skills, sharing knowledge, growing food, addressing social justice issues. Sophia, do you want to go first?
At the Real Food Farm, we started processing compost via a compost cooperative, and most of our members come from about a 3-mile radius around where we're located, which again is in Clifton Park, Baltimore. And we've created several partnerships with local businesses as well. For example, we work with a couple local florists, most often local cauliflower, and we take all of their green waste from their shop. And also we partner with the Institute of Local Self-Reliance and also with Compost Cab, who gets to drop off with us as well. And we adopted the cooperative model because I feel really passionately about people being able to sort of take initiative and responsibility for their trash. One of the most pressing and upsetting things to me about the way that we live these days is that we buy packaged things or single-use items, and we put them out on our in our driveway or on our street, you know, to be picked up in our alleys, and someone takes them and we have no idea where it goes. But one of the really pressing issues facing Baltimore is that Curtis Bay, which is like in the southern part of Baltimore City, it was the most polluted zip code in the United States in 2013 and 14, I believe. And that's because it's home to like 5 different incinerators. And so part of the reason why I'm so set on making people responsible for their own food waste is because it is directly affecting their health, because these incinerators are, you know, putting toxic chemicals out into the air, which people are breathing, and there's high levels of asthma and early rates of death in Curtis Bay. And I'm trying to have people, especially here in the Clifton Park area, just be responsible and change their habits in ways that is conducive to rehabilitating city soils. And so the cooperative model allows for us to do that, in that we're really transparent in what compost is, how it comes about, how you can do it at home, how you can do it with us, how you can use it in your garden, ways to just reduce your food waste production at home. Because we do have the good fortune of being on a farm, we're sort of able to demonstrate the ways that, you know, food can go from ground to plate to compost and then right back into the garden. And so you really see the whole picture there of like the life of food.
If I could just ask you a quick question, Sophia, you mentioned that you were on a farm. Now, that is an urban farm, right? I mean, it's probably one of the few farms that has bus stops nearby, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it is an urban farm. We grow on about 6 acres. We actually farm the athletic fields of a school. So we have a little bit more space than most of your urban farms. But yeah, we're right off of Harford Road, which has bus stops all up and down it. But actually, there's quite a few urban farms and gardens in Baltimore. So we're not the only one doing cool compost stuff.
Yeah, Guy, what about yourself? What are you and BK Rot doing in the Bushwick community to empower people?
So kind of the central thing of BK Rot is really about jobs creation. We are in this really interesting moment in New York City where the city has long nurtured a strong community composting culture, but that community composting culture is based mostly on volunteer-based composting. And so we're interested in trying to take this kind of labor that communities should do in order to keep resources local and turn it into something that's a job. You know, so that there's not this like barrier to entry around like who has time to actually do this volunteer work. The way that we run our compost system, we have youth workers who are picking up food scraps on bike and then doing all the work of processing it, sifting it, bagging it, distributing it. They're paid $15 an hour. You know, they get the STEM education around compost. It's a good job. These kids are treated as experts because they know how to run a compost system and they understand the science of it. And then they also working on getting them public speaking opportunities as they kind of help to represent the org at events and stuff. I just kind of wanted to build off of Sophia's point about the incinerators at Curtis Bay. Bushwick has likewise long been a huge sacrifice zone in just like you know, New York's general pattern of environmental racism. Bushwick has been home to, you know, a disproportionate amount of the city's transfer stations for decades. And so one of the things BK Rod is interested in doing is trying to design ways in which we can deal with waste in a way that is not onerous. That is, there's going to be waste everywhere in New York City. And if we're creating waste management infrastructure that's actually pleasant to be around, I think that's a really important intervention that we can make.
If I hear a critique often about coming from more conservative circles, it's that dealing with food insecurity in major cities would be solved better by just getting more Walmarts in and around them rather than anything else. And I'm just curious if you can give us a better sense of how your approach is better than kind of looking to a big corporation coming in and just selling more food.
I mean, I guess like the biggest things for me is just about the way that value is moving in that kind of system. With BK Rod's system, and we're not explicitly addressing food, waste is kind of more central to us, but we do try to create a system in which we're keeping value close to us. The value that's inherent in food scraps is being extracted and distributed to workers within Bushwick rather than being extracted to somewhere outside of the city. And so with food systems there, I mean, I think it's just the exact same thing. Like we need to, like if we are putting Walmarts in our cities, that is really just creating a big siphon for value out of, to like pull value out of neighborhoods.
And Sophia, I'd love to hear your take on it as well.
I'm always thinking about, like, should anything happen, should we face a natural crisis, a political crisis, you know, a warfare crisis, like what happens to cities? Cities so often only have, you know, like a 3-day food supply at most. And so if we're talking like sustainably, if we're talking about creating a system that's going to work no matter what happens, like really making a community wealthy, then like your food should come from where you live, you know, like all that food that comes to Walmart comes from, you know, huge Midwestern conglomerate farms that really have no interest in the people even eating it, you know, but if we can have people making their own food and using compost that they make from their food waste to make that happen, I think that ultimately the community is richer and the individual is richer. And, you know, those things don't happen mutually exclusively. And that's sort of like the cooperative idea that the wealth of the community is individual wealth, that no one person is like better off without their community being empowered as well. And so I think that, you know, when you're talking about addressing food deserts, it's such a huge problem, especially in Baltimore. I mean, like, you're talking about adding more Walmarts, like most of Baltimore is a food desert. And what we talk about when we talk about food deserts is like having fresh produce available within a quarter mile of where you live. I personally wouldn't consider, you know, the food that you get at Walmart to be representative of what would be a healthy diet. First of all, it's not even an entity that's dedicated specifically to providing food. Sort of reiterating what Guy said, that wealth that we're creating from food waste and food scrap needs to be recycled within our communities in order to truly make a wealthy community and a sustainable one at that.
Right. I think those are really good points that, that both of you raised.
I think you guys do such a great job of exemplifying how something like composting fits into this idea of empowering local communities and addressing issues like social and environmental injustices and food deserts in particular. So I think it's a connection that it's not always a natural connection for people to make. So I think that hearing your stories just really helps put that into context. I would also add to the question that Chris just posed that I think that community gardens, urban farms, community composting, anything like that that you can do in our communities that brings people together and gets people to collaborate on sort of these positive projects, you know, for a positive end goal is just building those connections that I think can't be overstated how important that is, especially in a time when there are, is gentrification and other forces like that, that sort of makes it harder for people to connect with each other, just creating these sort of positive and safe spaces for neighbors to meet each other and collaborate, I think is a really beautiful and powerful thing. And that's something that you don't necessarily get with a big box store like a Walmart.
I'd love to get a reaction from Sophia and Guy on that point, because I think it's a really interesting point in terms of any examples of communities pulling together and maybe then doing things that are even unrelated to the work that initially started, perhaps?
One of the awesome things that comes out of, like Linda was talking about, those points of personal connection is we can move beyond talking about food waste. You know, like that is one part of like the dire situation we're facing as Earth warriors in the current environmental crisis, but like it's not the only one. By being in this cooperative environment and like meeting monthly, meeting weekly, and like turning piles with people from the community and like talking about, you know, how much food scrap they're directly responsible for removing from the incinerator waste stream, like we get to open the dialogue to all sorts of other things, like talking about fossil fuel usage and how most of the people who drop off to our cooperative live within a couple mile radius, and talking about like alternative modes of transportation, or talking about alternative models of economy, you know, like talking about compost as that being a resource that is even greater than money, you know, because you can pay infinite amounts of money and never be able to rebuild severely degraded city soils. But compost can do that, you know? And so like we make these personal points of connection, and it opens our world to talking about all sorts of other stuff, like the climate march, or like making vegetable soup out of your food scraps that you don't necessarily want to throw away, like cabbage ends or carrot ends or broccoli stems. Just like that point where you can have conversation, where you can meet people face to face where they're at, where you can have that personal connection and like that dialogue, that back and forth, it opens the door to infinite collaborations as a community.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Guide, I'm just curious if you've seen anything like that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the connections you can create with people while doing this labor together, our current space, No Waste Lands, is a garden that was designed to be beautiful and open and inviting. And people walk in off the street to join us in this space just to look at flowers. We've started getting some kids. There's like a trio of, I think maybe like 10-year-old girls who just come in and like play with worms, and they're great. And they're just like kids who I know now. I mean, this is just like the creation of open space, the availability of work that is seen as valuable and interesting and educational and, you know, uplifting. You know, I think it all just goes to actually, like, it does pull people together. I mean, it builds community. It makes people talk to their neighbors, which has been a really exciting thing. And I feel so lucky to have been a part of it and to still be a part of it.
Excellent. So I think Linda has a closing question for you.
Thank you both for taking the time to share your stories today and sort of help put compost into context in terms of building local power. Sophia has sort of introduced us to the Curtis Bay neighborhood through what she mentioned about it earlier, being the most polluted zip codes in the Maryland state and so on. But Guy, I was hoping you might be able to share a little bit about what benefits you think a project which BK Rot has up in Brooklyn, what can transfer to a community like Curtis Bay in Baltimore and maybe even beyond.
I, for one, want models like BK Rot to be replicated far and wide. I think it is making this really important intervention in the way that waste systems work by taking waste and waste labor and making both of them more visible. Now, what that does is I think that it makes people more aware of what they're throwing away, but it also makes people more aware of, you know, the fact that work needs to be done in order to bring what they do throw away back into the economy, back into their world, back into the value of their life. And so I think that this kind of model has a lot of potential impact for a place like Curtis Bay. I think it has a lot of potential impact for places that can make use of compost through reclamation of that material through urban farming. I think it has a lot of use for places that have been overly burdened by waste infrastructure and that can benefit from having an actually like nice waste infrastructure in the area. And I think it could be useful in places that, you know, have a crisis of opportunity, like Curtis Bay, like Baltimore, where we need more jobs for people that are good jobs, that pay decently, are rewarding, and make you feel like you are contributing to the world. Yeah.
Great answer. And I think that something maybe that wasn't touched on is that Curtis Bay, not only does it have so many incinerators, it's also seen a loss of industry over the last decades in terms of manufacturing and shipbuilding. So the opportunity to employ local youth is really a powerful thing, I think, in that context especially.
Just another dynamic to add to the Curtis Bay situation is it's also home to Baltimore City's largest public housing unit. Its population is by and far very economically depressed.
Yeah, that's pretty powerful. And Sophia, you're from Baltimore, right?
Yep.
Guy, where are you from again?
Silver Spring, Maryland.
I don't know if there's anything else that you want to make sure we touched on.
Yeah, go for it.
One of the things that I have been really excited about is being an opportunity present in Compost. That's just inherent in the method, is that it's very low tech and very DIY and doesn't actually require a ton of investment. And so it really, unlike, say, metals or glass recycling, Compost really offers people a way to design resource recovery systems that work for them. And there's just a lot of flexibility in the design of compost systems. It creates a lot of opportunity for creating more sustainable and more just cities.
Yeah, I'm glad you made that point. It's worth remembering, you know, these things that you can do just about anywhere with a small loan or maybe not even needing that. That's the kind of opportunity that we need to be promoting. Well, any closing comment from Sophia?
One of the most valuable lessons that I get from doing this often, weekly, every day in terms of making compost, you know, is that by involving the community in our endeavor, we're making all of those people co-conspirators in our effort to rehabilitate our immediate environments. You know, we're not allies, which sometimes can become like a passive thing, but co-conspirators, you know, it's an active role that you're taking in creating the better world you want to see. And it is always amazing and powerful to me.
I love that compost conspiracy idea.
Yeah, and I think on that we'll close it out. It's been a very interesting conversation, and I'm really glad to know not only that you guys are out there doing this work, but that you're able to share it. And I hope that we'll inspire other people to do these sorts of things in their communities. Linda, was there a good place that we can direct people to learn more about the sort of things we've been talking about?
I think that our website at www.ilsr.org.
Dig into composting at ilsr.org. That should be our new jingle. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. And we'll catch you in another 2 weeks with another Building Local Power podcast.
That was Sophia Hussein and Guy Schaefer joining Linda Bilsons and Christopher Mitchell for episode number 19 of the Building Local Power podcast. Take a look at more of our composting resources at ilsr.org/initiatives/composting. You can learn more about her guest projects at realfoodfarm.civicworks.com and bkrot.org. Subscribe to this podcast and all of our podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. You can also sign up for our monthly newsletter at ilsr.org. Thanks to Dysfunction Al for the music, licensed through Creative Commons. The song is Funk Interlude. I'm Lisa Gonzalez from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Thanks again for listening to episode 19 of the Building Local Power podcast.